Well, the question I have is it possible for me to get a copy of this with a photo so that I can learn the names of everybody else?
Oh, right now?
Well, not right now, but anytime.
Thank you so much. Oh, Braille, too.
Thank you. Very fancy. Maybe at the end of the meeting you can give it to me.
Okay. I'll actually need to add you in here.
So I've replaced Gavin. He's been removed.
Okay.
And then I've been added.
Okay.
So
you can write on the table.
No.
Thank you. Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Sven Govender. I'm Chief Director of Curriculum at DB.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Duwan Mahatanga. My name is Duwan Mahatanga.
Good morning, my name is Marco Schmidt. I'm from the German Consulate General and I'm with PLO.
Good morning, my name is Chris Lynn and I'm from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
My name is Rob Queen, I'm from Ministry of Education.
Good morning, my name is Kayla Mohebi, Indigenous Officers.
Good morning, Chair and everyone. I'm from the member of the media. I'm from News 24. My name is Paul.
Good morning, I'm here at Liberal Public and Digital Education Research.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister, Chairperson, last time when we met, I did indicate that I was accompanying the Minister to Swaziland. We were going to receive, among other things, the results of SACMEC 2013. I'm sure you'll be happy to learn that we now have the final, no longer preliminary report of SACMEC. And the good news is that we have essentially maintained our improved performance with 7 points. And Honorable Davis will also be happy to learn that we are on 500 center points all the way for the first time ever since we participated in this study. I thought I must start on that positive note, and I'm sure when Parliament starts its progress in the next term, you might want us to come back and give you the final report of the SACMEC results. You remember that 15 countries participated. We moved from even position 8 to position 6 now. We managed to beat them. And the other countries that are on top are essentially Kenya and generally the countries that are smaller than us. I thought I must start on that positive note. Chair, as you correctly...
Maybe it should be proper that we congratulate you and look forward to that recommendation where we come to the full report on the SACMEC results, but really let us comment the details that you have just presented to us.
Thank you very much, Chair. I am just going to, because this is a progress report, we have presented to the Security Committee on these two topics before. So my emphasis will mainly be on areas that are indicating progress. And therefore, I'm not going to read the presentation. the one on the implementation and introduction of African languages, indigenous African languages. This is the outline of the presentation, and as I said, it's just a progress report. And the point that I want to emphasize, the incremental introduction of African languages is a deliverable that flows from the National Development Plan, as you can see from the exact quotation of the National Development Plan, which even included the page number there. And I remember last year, Chair, your committee asking us as to what are we doing about implementing the National Development Plan. This is one of those deliverables that are flowing from the National Development Plan. In terms of the background, we're just indicating that the implementation of the strategy started in 2030, and at the core of the strategy is to contribute to our social development in the country. As we all know, that schools are instigators of future citizens. And therefore, this strategy is really intended to contribute to our social cohesion in our society. We're essentially targeting languages that were historically marginalized. And the NDP is very clear on which languages were marginalized, which languages were promoted historically in the country. And the schools that we are looking at is 3,558 in terms of our MS data. And we also want to share with the committee in terms of the progress we started in 2021, 2022, 2014 and 2015. And we covered only about 264 schools. And the number grew in 2016 to 842, which constitutes about 23.7%. In 2017, the number further increased to 973, which is about 27% of schools that are implementing. We're also just reminding the committee, Honorable Chair, that we presented to you last time on the 28th of February, and these are the issues that we raised when we presented to your committee last time. In terms of new developments, on the 12th of May, we presented to the Minister's Committee, which we call the Ministerial Management Committee meeting, and the decision of that committee was that instead of spreading the implementation towards 2020, by next year all schools in grade 1 should be implementing the strategy. And that decision was further taken to the Council of Education Ministers, which is a political meeting of basic education and Council of Education Ministers then took that decision of the Commission to say yes, all the remaining schools should implement the strategy next year. So we're no longer talking about the spread implementation to 2020, we're talking about 2018. The legislative framework, well, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, in particular Section 6, the South African Schools Act, again Section 6, the National Education Policy Act of 1996, clause number 4, is of a specific reference in terms of the need to implement a strategy of this nature. We also have the Language in Education Policy of 1997, which stresses the notion of multilingualism, and also about promoting home language and essentially making sure that we deal with the social nature. The National Curriculum Statement for grade R to grade 12 also supports the implementation of this. These are the objectives, and I'm not going to spend time on them because I know that they are well known. And then I'll then move to just look as you said, from the NS data, 3,558, then broken down as today. Here we just showing progress and the languages that are covered the province. And languages that are covered are mainly informed by the languages that are used for communication in each of the nine provinces. So provinces will select from these languages. And here you can then see that provinces that were making Western Shrine, followed by Kimberanga, and I think you go to Northwest, and I think the data is from here. And this is just a summary to show that Honorable Matthias, the Free State is not only leading in the results, but even in the implementation of the strategy. They started late, but maybe sometimes there's value in starting late, because you then spend 90% in your preparation, and when you begin to hit the ground, you start flying, like Free State has demonstrated. That they are essentially at 89%. It is unparalleled compared to the rest of the other provinces. And this is some of the experience that they've shared with us. They said, we focused on sorting out issues around boost provision. In other words, the teachers, number of teachers who are supposed to teach these African languages. We also had to deal with the general attitude towards African languages. And in this case, it's not only among non-Africans, but even from Africans. Because African languages, many people believe that they don't have parents to transfer, they want to go overseas, and so on and so on. So that's the misconception that we are dealing with. So that people know that languages can serve themselves even overseas, you can obtain experiences with other countries from your own language. And the teaching capacity is one of them. And Gauteng also, because the two provinces are the leading provinces in implementing the strategy, they also share their own experiences as to how they've gone about those three cardinal deliverables. And in terms of provisioning model, the iterant model has proven to be working. The iterant model, just to remind the committee chair, are teachers who are not attached to a school, but are, for purposes of administrative management, they would be attached to a second or a district. They are called iterant teachers. And you utilize them for a cluster of schools because the offering of this subject do not necessarily require that teachers must be attached to a school and not be trained there. So you use iterant teachers and teachers even from the existing staff, because among the subjects that teachers would have been trained in, some of them would have been trained in one of these subjects. We also looked at the utilization of ICT as a support mechanism for the implementation of the strategy. Private schools, many private schools are implementing what is in the strategy. In other words, offering African languages. In fact, if not all of them, quite a number of them are implementing that. And they are using best practice from the schools. And I think overall, in terms of what the Department of Basic Education, provinces and districts are expected to do in the successful implementation of the strategy, these are the key deliverables from those three levels. And the implementation plan for 2018, and as I indicated earlier on, the timelines have to be revised to from 2020 to 2018, but all schools by 2018. What is needed, the basic essential for this strategy to be successfully implemented, things like LTSM, broadcast support and so on, audiovisual materials and so on will also be provided. And what we are doing here, we're giving a combination of progress and schools that are still outstanding, which should come on board in 2018. That's what this slide is attempting to do. And we've broken that data process. And we are also saying, in terms of our plan, we're looking for implementing this to reach grade 12 by 2029. And this is how the plan will unfold. And as I indicated earlier on, the implementation will cover these areas that are indicated here. And the responsibility for the Department of Basic Education is delineated that in terms of those deliverables. That applies to keeping some of the deliverables for PED. And we're focusing in the next slide mainly on provincial education departments and looking at and that's the end of the presentation in terms of progress. I'll then move to the next one, if you allow me to do that, which is about progress report on the investigation to offer this three to all learners in the country. And again, it is something that flows from the National Development Plan. And as I've indicated earlier, also the National Development Plan is very well in terms of history, culture, heritage, and that exposure of learners to a subject such as this one has a value in terms of also contributing to not only national identity, but to social cohesion as well. And the issue in terms of the problem statement is that we believe that history is very important as a subject to expose all South Africans to understand where we're coming from and to also even create a new path going to forward. There is a notion that says we study the day before yesterday so that we understand what happens today. And we study what happens today to sharpen our perspective for the future. And I'm sure, Chair, you also know that the importance of history is very, very, very much highlighted in the development. And just to indicate that in terms of the general education and training plan, general education and training plan, grade R to grade 9, history is compulsory as part of your social sciences or social studies, depending which nomenclature you use. But it becomes optional from grade 12, from grade 10, which is your further education and training plans. In other words, from grade 10, you can choose whether you're going to be history or you other subjects. From grade R, you said general education training plan is grade R to grade 9, but history is offered from grade 4 to grade 9. Just to give that explanation. We've also observed that in some schools and in some provinces, there's been a decrease in the offering of history. We're still also investigating as to exactly who are the learners who are offering this subject. Does it reflect the broad population of the country, or only a certain section of the country is offering this subject? We've also observed that some schools are actually moving away from offering the subject, and the numbers that are indicated here will show the decline in the economy of history. And it's broken down this data that the trend in terms of the growth of the subject. A very important point that we need to make, we are saying the subject is not growing as it should, and we're losing the opportunity for learners to gain from a sense of nationalism, patriotism, and nationalism. We are all fully aware of the possible danger also of using history for propaganda. And we are cautioning the nation about that, and we are saying that is not the route that our country would like to take in a democratic dispensation. And then, Chair, the desktop research which was done looked at the following questions. When should the study of history be compulsory? I've already indicated that 4 to 9. What is the status of history in the curriculum? Is it compulsory, optional, taught as part of the wider subjects such as humanities or social sciences or a standalone subject? What content is actually taught? And part of what we are looking at is whether we need to even strengthen what is offered from 4 to 9 and what is even currently offered from 10 to grade 12 as a subject that we have. And these are the outcomes of the desktop research. And clearly, it shows that it's a mixed bag. There are countries that offer requirements to schools. There are countries that offer primary school up to lower secondary school. And then, lower secondary school is 8 and 9. And then upper secondary school will be between 10 to 12. And the next one is just really a summary of what we've just looked at. And these are the members of the ministerial task team. The minister appointed the task team to look at this issue. And these are the members. You can see the broad selection of expertise from high-ranking institutions and organizations in the country. In terms of racial representativity and I think gender as well, we've tried to make sure that there's broad representation there. We've also, as part of the terms of reference, were to look at whether history should continue to be a standalone subject, as I said earlier on. There were views that you could also infuse it into life orientation as a subject, given the importance of life orientation for the holistic development of the child. As part of your civic education, it could be offered there as an aspect of one of the disciplines that are catered for within life orientation. And as I indicated earlier on, strengthening the content in some countries, we find that even in Europe, the dominant aspect of it is about Europe, and the rest of the other continents remains in what remains. And we're also looking at that. Do we need to have a dominant aspect about South Africa and the continent of Africa, and then what remains then becomes the rest of the world? We also looked at issues of teacher development, whether it's initial teacher development or continuing teacher development. What are the implications for that? And then the draft implementation plan. Because once the ministerial task team has done its work, as part of its recommendation to the minister, they will also present an implementation plan as to how this should be implemented. And the intention is that it must be the final report of the Minister of Climate. That was part of the terms of reference. The ministerial task team to look at also international comparison research done by GDP, and they must also strengthen it to look at countries like China, India, Russia, Brazil, Nigeria, Rwanda, Zimbabwe, and a draft report in that regard must be submitted on the 17th of March, which I think has been done. To look at strengthening the curriculum again from grade 4 to grade 7, and look at, you know, the options necessary to advise the minister, but also for the schools that are offering the subject, and even the training of teachers for initial teacher education at the university level. What is the curriculum? What is the content of the training of teachers? Because that will inform also what should obtain in our schools. This is the additional research that the ministerial task team came up with. And again, still the same as the desktop research, is a mixed bag. There are countries that offer this only at primary school level, and there are those that are offering it up to lower primary, and there are those that take it from grade 10 up to the completion of secondary school. And the view of the ministerial task team is that history has got an important place in the school curriculum for most parts of the world. And as I've indicated, there are variations from one country to the other. There are those that are doing it like we're doing it now. There are those that are implementing. In fact, some countries even insist on history as a compulsory subject up to university level, first degree. And then the roundtable discussion, we just bring in the roundtable discussion, which took place in December 2015. And I'm not going to spend time on that. And those are the stakeholders that were there. And these are the objectives. And these are the outcomes of that roundtable discussion. Very clear recommendations that said increase the scope of international comparative study, as you would have seen in the initial slide. That was included as a result of the recommendations of this roundtable discussion. And the review and the strengthening of the curriculum, both in the GET and the FET, was the outcome of this roundtable discussion. Consider including this under life orientation. It was part of the discussions of the roundtable discussion. Look at the implications for the demand and supply of teachers. It was part of the roundtable discussion. But I can also say we have very good lessons from mathematical literacy. When we introduce mathematical literacy, people said, you are not going to make it. Where are you going to get teachers? We did our own work. Now, mathematical literacy is offered to over 60% of learners in the system successfully. And is one of those subjects that has grown cognitively in demand and is doing very well. And I'm therefore saying those are the lessons that we can also take in implementing the outcomes of the work of the ministerial task team when it comes to history. So those were the outcomes of the roundtable discussions. And progress in the implementation, as I said, the comparative studies have been conducted in these countries. And areas of weaknesses and strengths in the content have also been identified and even revised in these grades that I indicated there. Now, the implementation plan going forward of the activities of the ministerial task team is that it will complete the curriculum revision work in grade 10 to 12, looking at May to June this year, meet the National Institute on Human and Social Sciences to request funding for the training capacity building of teachers who are offered in this grade. And the deadline is May this year. Audit history trainee teachers in the higher education institutions, the deadline is July this year. Convene provincial consultative meetings to share and strengthen GET and FET curriculum for public comment July and August this year. Release of the final report to the minister, as indicated earlier on, the deadline is December this year. Prepare a management response to the recommendation of the ministerial task team and compile a draft action plan for implementation, because once the work has been done, the department must come up with a plan to implement, and the target then is February to March 2018. Consultation with internal structures, which are indicated there, is April, May 2018, and preparation of the system to commence after CEM approval. We are looking at June and September 2018. So that is the plan of the ministerial task force, and this is the end of the program. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DJ, for the two presentations, the progress. And DJ, as we are continuing to present, I think there are quite a number of questions that are raised, but when, as we are saying, the ministerial task force is busy with looking at some of these issues that you have raised, but still, I think the honorable members are willing to engage with the presentation, with the two presentations that have been given. Before I even raise my concerns, let me allow the honorable members to engage with the two presentations that have been given to them. You just indicated, you've taken them both as they've been as they have been given to us, we take them on. Let me just note the changes that come. The Honourable Khoza, Honourable Majeke, Honourable Olive, Honourable Bosho, Honourable Khoza, Honourable Baton. You're going to sing? Thank you so much. Can I start with you then, Honourable Khoza? One question.
Thank you, Chair. I'm being intimidated that I have to ask one question. But Chairperson, let me take this opportunity and welcome the two presentations and make an indication that they're both long overdue. And we'd like to appreciate that it is now high time that it is taken very serious, and we think it is going to lead good results. But when looking at both of them, in terms of the provision of teachers, Chairperson, I think it's a question of the demand on the part of both the African languages and the history, in terms of the workload. If you look at both of them, they've got a approach in their offering. As a result, if you look at a language per se, so most of the teachers are scared of facing the issues of marking the essays. That is why perhaps they they tend to shift away, running away from doing those studies. So if that can be looked at, because as we speak presently, those who are offering languages at a school level, they are tiring of the workload. At times, even the timetable when it is set internally, it doesn't give them space to deal with the essay markings, the literature work that is supposed to be marked, and it also involves essays, writing. So as a result, then they are struggling. So for them to run away, they say, no, let us not do the language. So I think we have a serious challenge, Jefferson, in terms of motivating teachers to say, really, even if there is more working, it needs people with passion who can be able, who with the love of the subject that he can be able to offer, instead of saying we can run away. If we run away, who else is going to offer those subjects? So that is my plea in terms of the weighting of the subject because of the marking question that is associated with that one. But other than that, it was really of negligence on our part as South Africans in our school setup if we were to deal away with history. Because I think history is it's a lifeblood of everything that we're doing. Because as the DG has said, we build from the past, looking at the present for the future. So when it was dealt away with some of the schools because of the attitude that we have to deal with now, to me, I think we are in the right path, and definitely we need to support this program so that we achieve our goals. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG, for the presentation. It is true that the introduction of African languages is definitely a step in the right direction for the department. I can only say I wish you luck in the implementation of the policies, taking into consideration the strength of society that you come from. Question is the African languages going to be accompanied by any formal assessment? And if not, how will the learners be motivated to take this subject further? On the history side, is the department planning to ensure that is there going to be any balance between ensuring the ongoing programs of addressing the skills gap amongst the youth? Are they not going to be interrupted by the introduction of the history? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks so much, Honourable Majeda.
Thanks, Chair. This is my maiden speech. I just have three questions. I've discovered, you know, moving from portfolios, that there's something I'm going to have to learn in the education portfolio, and that is all these terms that you use. I'm not clear what half of them mean. So you spoke about these tests, I think SAGMEC or something. I have no idea what that means. Maybe you can just tell me what the letters all stand for so that I'm up to speed. The second one is just on African languages. I mean, I think this is a fantastic program. When I was in high school back, just before the Anglo-Boer War, when I was in high school, we learned, I did isiXhosa up to grade 9. And then I gave it up because I wanted to study history, and I was only allowed so many choices, you know. So then it all fell apart. So I'm sorry that I didn't finish doing isiXhosa up to matric level. I think it would have been a great thing to have. Also, they wouldn't let me do typing because my school didn't have computer studies. And, you know, we already were getting computers back in the 80s, and I wanted to study computers, and they wouldn't allow me. So I said, fine art and typing, and then the headmaster said, no, that's only for the girls. I think it was a great program. I just have one question about it. Do you include private schools? Your table 6.2 is so many schools per province. Does that include private schools, or is that only for public government schools? That's my second question. Then my last question, just forgive me, it's my first day, but I want to tell you a little story. I loved history. I was a history buff. And I've continued. So all the time I'm reading history today, every year get a series of books about some aspect of history, and I read whether it's Shaka Zulu's mother, what she was doing, whether it's the Vikings invading England, or at the moment I'm reading a series about it's historical novels about King Arthur. So a lot of it is fictional. And I read recently the diaries and works written at the time of Jan van Riebeck when he arrived at the Cape. And you learn so much from history. I'm passionate about history. I learned about Jan van Riebeck. And the first 5 years he was at the Cape, they already did mixed marriages. Mixed race marriages. Here. One block away from here. In 1655, I think it was. We already had mixed marriages. So this nonsense that came later was something you don't know about, because, well, you don't know about that history until you actually start to scratch and read the real documents. You know, not what you get told by politicians when they're making political speeches. History is a very important subject. However, I'm not convinced about the compulsory subject side of it. If you look at these different countries that you've studied in including your presentation, we're already in the top 25% of countries in terms of requiring history as a compulsory subject for grade 9. So if you look at the other countries, we're already in the top 25% of requiring it. And while I think every child should study history, I'm not sure that we should force them to do it after grade 9. If people want to study computer science, it might be for them that it is a more useful subject when they get to a job. If they want to study science and not history, it might be more useful for them when they get to university and they have to know something about formulas and so on. If I went back to school, I would study history as a matric subject again. I would still choose it. I think I've learned so much from it. I'm just not convinced that we should force kids to do it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think when you take all the compulsory subjects out of the curriculum, you're left with, I think, three choices. Am I right? For grade 10, 11, and 12. I think you only have three choices. So now we're going to take one away and only give the pupils two choices, because they're going to have to do history as well. I'm just a little bit concerned that we are reducing the options, instead of increasing the options, and I just want to get the opinion on that. Why force? When the government comes with a big stick, I always get nervous. You know? I would do it, personally. I did. I'm sure the minister will go and Google my matric results or get a couple of things. I think I've got a C in matric for history. And for information, my worst subject ever was the same as the Honourable Malema, also only got 33% for Woodward.
Thank you very much, Honourable. Though Honourable Malema, let me warn you one thing. I'm so excited that Honourable is raising the issue of cooking and cooking. When you look at it, you will see even this. When you share something on his application, watch out teaching. He might be advocating that on his application.
Thank you very much. Good morning to everybody. I agree, I embrace and support the implementation of the IIAL, but I just have some few reservations. I haven't seen anything about Khoisan being mentioned. Is that part of the IIAL? I haven't picked it up in the report, And as my colleague Honorable Paul Zach said, the workload of teachers has to be taken into consideration, especially in the rural areas where the ratio of teacher to learner is 1 to 60, 1 to 70, 1 to 80. And I would like to know, if you are speaking of reaching your objective by 2026 for IIAL, in all subjects, these extra IIAL languages, are you ready and will it be able to be done? Because if you have a look here, only 842 schools, they give you 23.7%, have implemented it by 2016. I'm just afraid that we're not going to reach the target by 2026. And then on page 4, slide 7, you say that the Minister's management team resolved to recommend to SEM that all schools that are currently not offering a previously marginalized official African language should implement it by 2018. Will this be attainable? If you look at slide number 12, the breakdown of schools per province, you say 3,558 that were not offering African languages out of how many schools? 3,558 out of how many schools? I want to know what the percentage is there. Is it that 27.3 that we spoke of in the first slide? And then, sorry Chair, we just have to have a bit of patience here. If one has a look at the current hours of schooling for grade 1 and 2, it's 23 hours per week, and grade 3, it's 25 hours per week. If language is to be introduced, you will have to extend the learning hours by 2 hours, which gives you 24 minutes per day. And in grade 3, it's going to increase by 3 hours per week, which gives you 36 minutes per day. Is this going to be attainable? And then grade 4 to 12 currently is 27.5 hours per week. You'll have to extend it to 32.5 hours per week, and that gives you 1 hour per day. I'd just like to know if we are going to be able to reach that. And then nothing was mentioned about where the authority lies to introduce IIAL. Does it lie with the SGB? Or does it lie with the department? And then with regard to history, the question has been asked with regard to enough educators. I would also just like to know if we are on par with our history teachers. And then your slide 6 says that the subject among learners and parents has dropped in provinces. Could you indicate why? Is it because it is currently not necessary to have it as a varsity subject? Because if 157,000 learners wrote out of a total of 610, it's actually 610,000, it is shocking. And then I would just like to refer you to a report dated the 24th of March 2017, where Mr. Govender told the Mail and Guardian that the issue came up during discussions on the progress report. And he says that not enough has been done to decolonize history and subjects in the education field. Now, I would like to know what we have done and how the decolonization of the CAPS curriculum will take place. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Can I, Chairperson, really welcome the presentation, both presentations, and to further indicate my excitement of this initiative, which is in a positive direction. But Chairperson, to also register my disappointment, because my beloved Shitsonga is not part of the project in my province. Really. I've been raising it timelessly, but here I'm representing a national, but I must raise that really my beloved Shitsonga is not in my province. But I welcome the initiatives are very good. I'm having just three issues to raise, Chairperson. First issue regarding the history. I wanted to know, to check as to our readiness with regard the educators to the subject, if we are to implement the compulsory. The other issues on ERS, one of the challenges Chairperson regarding the implementation is the acquisition of qualified teachers, as well as looking at the number of the temporary teachers that we have. What are the plans in place to ensure that this project is highly achievable? I want to make that. Lastly, I have noticed a vast difference with regard to the implementation of ERS in provinces. What may be the causes of such differences? Because some provinces are on implementation are at 90%, while others are at 1%. Is it optional? Is the project optional? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I have said, I'm already thanked by the previous honorable. And just to echo the people who have thanked, who are just being excited as myself. For both programs, really, we're looking forward to getting a final report of these programs. Honorable Olive, you know, you touched the history of self-fundraising. Speaking about mixed marriages, then you took me back home when we insult each other in Northern Cape. If we analyze the word postman or bushman, it will give you a nasty history of that. I don't want to damage right here. But it is something that we must work upon it. And language, the importance of language cannot be nation without history is a lost nation. But Chairperson, I would like just to get clarity or, you know, beginning of the term or beginning of the year, the report we got was that provinces have no money, no funds to implement this program. I was so disappointed. I even said the Northern Cape is running this and we just need support. So I want to know now, whether you have now secured funds that this EAL program should not be a program that will just vanish because there's no money. As a treasurer, by the program. Is it funded? also, just to add on the problem, or the point that has been raised by the previous speaker, the existing, the use of existing staff. Honorable Boshoff took it to the rulers earlier, the one which I had a picture of rulers, a lot of work on rural educators. And even the existing teachers have their subjects, and they have even at high school level, not even at what we call three people, administrative people, to do their administration. Now to add something, another or an extra weight upon them, are we not I would like to know if this is not for formal assessment, the implementation of African language is not for formal assessment, it's just for communication as I see. How is DBC going to make sure or to measure effectiveness of the implementation of the policy? And how are the learners going to be motivated to take this? And as the task team when reporting, they should also empower us on how can or are we going to deal with the resistance. To mention the private school, I don't want to say private, but even the model school, the model C, S model C schools were previously model C. Some they don't implement history totally, it's not in their strength. How are we going to deal with such situation where they will say, undemocratic, the learners are forced to do this, whether it's their children, it's not the career of their children. They must be empowered. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair. I just have a couple of questions. First of all, I was actually amazed to see that history is no more as heavy a look as it used to be. It used to be one of those subjects that everyone used to run away from science and math, and you knew for sure that you know you're going to pass it. I just want to find out what is the alternative subject that learners are running to now as opposed to history. That can actually inform us if we're benefiting from that, with the subject that we can actually benefit from, and also you also inform us if should we, as my colleague said, it is better that we make it an option. So I think by determining which subject now has become popular, because as far as I remember, history was the most popular subject when I was studying. And also, with regards to languages, in terms of a language that is the African language of the school, the presentation for me was kind of like, it wasn't really cold enough for the research enough in terms of what are actually the hurdles. We're just saying, okay, we just mentioned that the Free State, this is how they were able to overcome the challenge, but then I would have liked to see per province what actually they have lost for it. That also is a good way of identifying the problem and then maybe coming up with solutions instead of just saying, you know, they're not complying. I would love to find out, you know, the teachers, because we should have a pool of teachers that have knowledge or that have studied African languages. I mean, you know, we have a lot of people who study PA in education, specifically on languages. So what are actually the challenges? Why are we not able to roll this or implement it as well? And also the presentation that we specifically say, we're saying that you've done well, okay, in the three states you've done well. So I assume that it is through grade 1 up to grade 12. But then in the other provinces, you don't see exactly which grades are we doing well at. So that also can inform us and say, okay, we have a pool of teachers who are able to teach languages in this grade, but then we have a shortfall of these grades. I think maybe like coming up with more like solution kind of slides could actually help us to say, okay, when we meet next time, to say, okay, how is this problem doing in terms of this issue, but it's that issue. It's just instead of like maybe making it too much general. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I also add one which we can even get to understand the attitude of the meeting that you had.
Oh, wow.
Happy New Year.
Thank you, Elijah. You have to say something. It's so right.
It's communicating.
Yeah. You know, on the meeting on the 18th of May, the CM will approve that all schools need to implement this IELTS by beginning of 2018. I think we all wish to hear what was the mood of that meeting. Because for me, it definitely, if we look at, it's like page 21, where you see those discrepancies when it comes to the performance of the provinces, where we're for the province that is standing at 1% now, only 10 schools, still outstanding 807. Go to another one, like Mpumalanga, 2%, still outstanding 180. So when we took this decision as to say, definitely you should even share the challenges as to say why the performance is so low and what is it that within this month can be done differently so that come 2018 it will be easy that we see all the provinces implementing. So if you can just share with us all those and some of the challenges, whether it was just a will from the provinces that we're not implementing, if the will was there, so what could it be and how are you planning to deal with all those challenges, so that come 2018 January, next year when we get an update again, we won't be faced with one and the same statistics that you are getting. So really, we'll appreciate it if you can share with us that one. Another challenge that we know, even from the African languages that are being offered in schools, not even this instrumental introduction of those that have not been offering, is the whole issue of the resources, books and so forth, that are a challenge. Go to Limpopo, even when we get matric results, we know that, you know, the development of those languages and the material to assist is a challenge. What is it that you are doing as a country, even to assist on this one? Or on making sure that schools are implementing this. But again, DG, the point that you have raised, the one of itinerant teachers, I think it's one of the valuable things that can be introduced in the department. And for me, what we can learn from the introduction of this incremental introduction of African languages, I think it can even assist in dealing with other subjects. Yes, this one, it can work even easily because not much of the time will be given to these languages at school. But for me, I think maybe there are so many lessons that we can learn from this one, Minister, which can even assist us moving forward on subjects where we have problems like mathematics, as to say, if we have good teachers within the secondary district or whatever, why do we have that teacher attached to one school, whereas we can use the teacher and the skills to assist a number of schools within the area. So I'm looking forward to read on this item and the teachers that are going to be utilized as they, what is it? Is it a point of order?
I just want to add a question. Maybe elaborate on my question.
I'll give you a minute. Yeah, I think that is what we can learn from this. When it comes to history, I'm a little bit embarrassed that I've been telling honorable because I came today. I know everyone did history. I'm one of those who did not take history as an elective when I went to my grade 10 to 12. And it's one thing that I always say, I missed a lot. But again, as we are saying, it goes back to the issue of options that we had, that even Belena still has, of which I'm one other that will never say, let us decrease the options that our learners are exposed to. But I fully understand, I fully agree that each and every learner, each and every South African must be exposed to history because there's a lot that you need. For now, again, DG, on your presentation, for me, it's very important again, even to maybe the ministerial task team will be coming up with these responses to say, even now, what you are saying is being offered in the GET band. What type of history are our learners exposed to? Because the issue of content is one of the things that we even raised on the previous presentation that we had, that it is very important to know what is there in the content. And also this option that is there, where we say life orientation everyone's taking life orientation. What are the contents of life orientation? What history we want to expose our learners, even at the FET phase? Be it as a standalone subject, be it as a module on life orientation, but I really think the issue of the content of what is it that we need to expose our learners to is very important, notwithstanding the point that DG raised very carefully yesterday, not in a manner of anyhow to give the propaganda to our learners. That is where we need to train very carefully, of which we are looking forward to the ministerial task team report as to say what is it that they come up with, what advice are they going to give to the minister. Because it's one of the subjects that we are all eager to see, we are all eager to have our learners being exposed to moving forward, and maybe even there the issue of the teacher, the IT learner that is going to be taken into consideration. But come 2018, it's one of the presentations where very early in the year we will have to get these reports as to say what is it that you are going to do when it comes to the implementation of the history. But the issue of funding, again, it's one of the problematic areas that you always encounter when you go to the provinces. Where do they implement us? The introduction of African languages, of which you have UDG to talk to, was to say, in your meeting again with the decision of implementing, what is it that you expect to that so that you don't face one of the same responses when you go to the provinces. Can I give to you another chance to expand more on your question and then hand over to the DG?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to go back to the slide 18, whereby the one for education, what is it, African languages. On that slide, you're saying that the DBE provinces and districts, they provide a foreign national support to all implementing schools. I would like maybe if you can just maybe elaborate on that. What is the responsibility of DBE on this, and also the provinces and districts? You're saying that, you know, collectively, that's what they're doing, but I would like to maybe if you can just maybe break it down. And also, the issue of budget. Is there a budget allocation specifically for implementing these languages? Is there any, because that's one of the hurdles that has been pointed out by provinces that during the budget, but I just want to know how much the budget, and is it allocated by DBE or it comes from the province itself will allocate. And also the teacher training. You're mentioning that also that the training, is there specific training that the teachers are given for African languages? And how many teachers have been trained, which are actually available to provide this?
Let me take the easy ones a little bit. Okay. Do the difficult ones. So I want to respond to all the questions too. Just generally on the introduction of African, the incremental introduction of African languages. What I can say, Chair, which is the point that you've made, the question that you've asked, is that I was quite humbled by the attitude of all of them. They were welcoming, there was no difficulty of resisting the introduction. The challenges would have been really around resources and planning for the implementation. As we said, when we started monitoring, the first thing was behind the consent. Then they did explain that at that time they didn't have the budget, they had to plan properly and realign. The provinces that are also lagging behind at the last meeting, which were monitoring regularly, did commit that they will go on. And there are different challenges that province experience which are not attitudinal. For instance, Mpumalanga has its own challenges around just the resourcing of the department and the split between, because it's resource informed. They have, and not only on African implementation of African languages. They just are beginning to experience problems with the allocation of their resources, how they allocate and prioritize curriculum. So it's a broader issue than the introduction of African languages that they have. Provinces, for instance, like the Western Cape, again, would not be attitudinal. It would have been just the ability to realign their resources and make sure that they implement, but essentially there is commitment to implement. So the various stages that provinces find themselves in, I can confirm, I'm not attitudinal, but perhaps it's poor planning, poor resourcing, it's not aligning, and that's the general picture, but there's great excitement about it. You also raised the question about the resources, books, and other materials. If you recall, we're speaking about, at a very low level, the rollout still at phase grade one, grade two, so we're still not at a very complicated level where we really need lots of resources. There's enough resources in the country. All we do is to align them to the curriculum, but it's so grade one, we presented grade one, grade two, grade three. So it's still at a level where we can manage in terms of resources. The biggest resources was time allocation, getting schools to realign their curriculum at a time, but also to get the adequate resources. And provinces in terms of their geographic makeup are very different, so that some provinces, like the rural provinces, you find it difficult to have teachers because of distances, which is different from if you're in Gauteng, you can hop from one school to the other. So there are also, as I say, different dynamics that are in provinces in terms of implementation. So I thought I should clear that one out. It's not about the attitude, but it's just management and resources that we're problem, and there is lots of excitement about it. We will check also on the allocation of subjects, because the idea is the dominant language in the area the school finds itself in, not in the province. Because these are mainly schools which were not teaching African languages, which will be formatted. In most instances, your former one is this school. So if, for instance, in Bush, remember, the schools that are supposed to teach the dominant language perhaps is in the area, I think the province would, but we'll still check why in Bush, for instance, or in some areas in Mpumalanga, they would not have chosen. So that we follow up. But the guidance was that we use, because it's also resource-driven. You would not want to burden provinces and say, in Western Cape, there is Sotho in Western Cape, but you can't burden Western Cape and say, teach Sotho. There's Sotho also in KZN,
understand, but also don't want to say now teach Zulu. The dominant language will be Zulu, therefore I think that it's a reasonable thing, because as I say, these things are constrained, the resources are also constrained. I actually have to look around to say why do I agree with this thing? Because when you agree with the opposition, you know there's something wrong with you.
And we often agree with you.
I know, but ideologically it's a problem sometimes, but then you're not sure if you're going right. When I was in attack, I saw certainly A, I said, now that's when I agree fully with Honorable Oli. I just was asking you to say, I think, but I fully agree with this sentiment, and I really can't overestimate. You know, if I had my way, if I was South Africa, I would have really said, I agree with you, history is such a beautiful subject. It's an extremely beautiful subject. And you would wish that every child would have had an opportunity to study history, even if that's, so it's not history as a runaway subject. So that even math learners, so that it's not for kids who don't want to do math. It's to say even learners who are doing math should also study history. And for all that, the reasons that you give, and what do I give? The life in which I find it sometimes quite sad to have such, sometimes ignorant children that you have, when you see the point, anywhere, my kid has a master's in law, she was quite blank when I was talking about it, when the excitement about it, because, oh, he was imprisoned with Mandela, and that's all that he knows about him. There's just no feel of who the person is, the role he's played, and just the understanding, a deeper understanding of who the person is. So it's actually, you really do feel that children could study history, but I agree with you that, and what the member said, in terms of balancing, you also don't want to make it compulsory. Right. So if, when this proposal came, if I was asked to just respond and that becomes policy, I would have said, yes, indeed, let's improve the content of our history. That's where the colonization comes. Because we're still teaching your Eurocentric history. That's what we're teaching. Our kids don't know anything about Latin America. Our kids don't know very little about the East, nothing about Africa. I mean, we talk about Sankara. Half the people don't even know what they're talking about. So, and for me, I would say South Africa must focus first on the content of what they're teaching, even at those lower grades, which is going to be a massive exercise to revamp. Rather than move to a stage where we are saying, let's now increase to 10 levels, there's lots of work that has to happen around the content of what we're teaching. And if we can get that right, most of the concerns that we have, I think, will be addressed if we do it right. I visited Cuba, and I was quite impressed about how they deal with history. They don't deal with it. So the teaching of history for me should be a mainstream issue about the reading cultures of people, around the materials that are there for reading, and about the roles of different institutions like your institution. Because what they do in Cuba, they have your cultural institutes that deal with different historical aspects of the world, not even of Cuba. They have an African park where they have all the busts of your key African leaders. You get your Tambo's bust there, and they've been writing about who Tambo is. They've been writing, so, and it's not done in school. It's done as part of their cultural heritage. Because for me, it's such a beautiful subject that you want everybody even to be exposed to the elements of history, so that you really, because when you go to grade, you could have thought it's a runaway subject, but when you go to grade 10, 11, and 12, you want kids to study history not as a remembrance of facts, but as a skill of how to do essay, to write logically, to remember facts. So there's also an educational skill around history, so it's not about the things that you want to do. About nationhood, about patriotism is part of it. But history as a subject, as a discipline, has got other skills that it has in kids. Just a love for reading. I mean, the fact that there's essay writing. When you do history, you must be able to read lots of text. Right? So it's also a skill just to be able to read lots of text and read. it broadly because you want to define that's why these students have to read three books at a time because they won't find all the information or all the nuances in one book. So there's lots of things that you want when they reach grade 10, 11, 12 to acquire as skills that you acquire through the learning of history. But I don't want to take your time, Chair, but I very fully agree with that. Okay. Some of the things that we should be doing to be included, but we have, I really think we have an opportunity of doing lots of work around life orientation. But the things that we want, that we say about nationhood, patriotism, and other things, are things that are life skills that I think are lacking amongst our kids, just understanding the environment. For me, the life skills more than history skills. Because history, the teaching of history for me is a skill in itself rather than the knowledge of facts. And I think what we need to do is even to promote, hence the reading culture, to promote the culture of reading. Because I agree with member that most of the things that, even if we can teach everything in history, the things we won't be able to teach if people don't read on their own. The things we won't be able to teach. We can teach them that, yes, there was a man called Sankara, but who he was and what he what makes him prominent means you have to read on his biography. You can't read it in a history class. All the histories about what, who did what and who they are, you can tell you about there was an O.R. Tambo was born in 1917. But who O.R. is, you can only get to understand him if you read literature on him. And so I fully, that's what I don't want to withdraw and let's just say we agree with the opposition and fellow South Africans.
Have you managed
to be approved? But as I say, it's not up to me. I think that's why we've sent it out. People have got different views. Let people speak about what needs to happen. But my orientation will be exactly like you say. But that's not what I want, which is going to be a conclusion. Other people feel that it should be up to grade 12. And I think it's going to, for me, it's going to interfere also with the choices that our kids need to make. We're saying we want, I can see the chairperson. So I have lots of people, especially from the people actually, short. And I just think to make it compulsory as a subject, we give it to Rob Gibson of its function and role as a full subject that is supposed to be studied with the same weight that you will be studying physical science and math. That's supposed to be weighed accordingly. But if you're going to be doing your three streams and doing all the things you say, there's a risk of overloading our curriculum or of downgrading history. So I think there are two risks to that. If you're going to teach history at the same level as physical science, which means you're adding another subject to children who have chosen that stream of special. But let's allow the nation to speak. So I'm really expressing my view, which are not necessarily popular views, I must say. The other thing that I think was raised about Khoisan, I was happy to hear that not only Kate is planning to introduce Nama, because as I say, this incremental introduction, there are resources there. And we're asking provinces to do, and that's why I'm very patient with them, asking them to do extra without necessarily me going to Treasury to say, please give me a budget for this new program. They have to make do, scrape around, and what I'm saying, if you want questions, then you have to write it up, it's all sorts of things, because some of these languages are unwritten languages, there's lots of communities which are also complaining to say, our languages are not dialects, they've been left out. So, again, I think it's resources-driven on the part of provinces to see how far they can cope to do something better. I know there's a whole pressure that we should get Khoisan languages coming to play. So Chair, I thought, the internet teachers also, for instance, and some provinces are using it. It's a very difficult system to manage, but I can tell you how they were using formative science. Because in Gauteng, even advantage, the schools are back to back. You can really move around. But if you have such a scarce skill like history, there are very few schools that can afford you to share that history teacher, that math teacher. So, because that math teacher will be required from grade 1 to 8. Whereas with African languages, we were running from grade R from grade 1, 2, 3, so the scale was quite different. But I know provinces do share teachers, for instance, English teachers, could be a very difficult subject. So you might find a teacher saying, I'm struggling to teach poetry. Then the province or the district then rotates people who are very good at really interpreting and other things and assisting kids who've got language barriers. We used to deploy teachers who could do remedial work when you really find that your kids can't read and you don't know how to teach them or to teach them to read and find that as a good teacher in another school. So they used to share resources in that way, but I think here the scale will be quite different. And again, the provincial geography determines the district model work. If you have a case that has where schools are about sometimes 100 meters from, it just doesn't work. It's very expensive even to pay for the traffic. But I thought I should say that some provinces use it even for different subjects. The culture used to be mainly for math, science, in English, but also used to be for life sciences where you have a very good teacher sometimes based in the district and they promoted the subject or the second manager, and you know this is an expert, just been promoted. At certain times after September, we used to release them from offices and send them back into school to go and troubleshoot in different areas in different schools. But yeah, so those are the key points of agreeing with the honorable member on the approach on the subject. We should work what is coming through my own perception and we'll be guided by what South Africans want at the end of the day. So don't be worried about that. Yes, please. The chair was shaking her hands to say, that's not the mandate. So I'm expressing my future, not the mandate.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Chair Minister and Honorable Member. Chair, my contribution will be cut from particularly the incremental introduction of African languages, the quote from the National Development Plan. And I just want to emphasize one point. Just to read one sentence, it says, African language is not the mother tongue. Those who are not the mother tongue speakers of African languages must at least have a conversational competence, which means you're not looking for offering African languages at home language level all the way. But it is available on home language, it is available on first additional language, it is available on second additional language. Those who come from the old school of thought, Minister, will say it is available on level 1, which is home, level 2, which is far, level 3, which is SAR. Our sense is that the majority of those schools with children who are not mother tongue speakers of African languages will opt for either level 2 or level 3, which will be it will be easier, let me put it that way, to offer. The second point is that the 3,558 schools, the majority of them are in the urban areas, not the rural areas. In the rural areas, you have a few of them, rural areas such as your small dorpies, like where I come from. But essentially, they are urban areas. They are not in your villages. You don't find them in the villages. So the issue of the workload and rural areas and so on, I'm just saying it's an issue that we have considered, and the facts indicate that it will not be an impediment. That's where the schools are. And then, Honorable Khoza, teacher demand and supply, we've looked at that, particularly in respect of the level that the school will choose. And you are saying, at the moment, it doesn't appear. Itinerant teachers, other mechanisms that are put in place that are available. And ICT is going to be one of the main support mechanisms for the system, which means we need to increase even our rollout for ICT. The motivation of teachers, I take your point, that of course the teachers will need to be motivated, even though it might increase the workload in terms of the written work that needs to be controlled, the written work that has to be given to learners. It's an issue that we'll look at. Maybe at the same time, I could, I'm sure Dr. Maboya or Mr. Gabeza will respond to the notional time per subject. In other words, time allocated per subject. We've investigated that 100 times, and we've not found that tolerable portion to be a problem at all. In fact, the figures that you indicated give you the exact figures. They are far more or less than those, because I suspect that your calculation was based on home language, not the other levels. With the other level, the allocated time is much less. Yeah. Honorable Majeke, we appreciate that you're supporting us on this one. Formal assessment, there will be formal assessment. Unfortunately, Honorable Majeke is out. There will be formal assessment. But what we have been advised not to insist on is to make it part of the promotion and progression. But formal assessment will be done. Plus, where tests and all of those things, they will be done. So that, I just wanted to say that formal assessment will definitely be. The offering of history and therefore impeding addressing other skills. Let me also say, and I have to be a bit measured here, I don't want to be the minister. The kind of compulsory, in fact, expect, I'm already saying it, minister, to say, like you have mathematics and mathematical literacy. You've got mathematics, which is core for those who want to acquire skills and even become, you know, like magistrates and lawyers. The majority of them would have done history, and they would have acquired those skills of the ability to conceptualize and write fast, which you can get from a subject like history. But the other form that should be anticipated to be offered by all learners would be like your mathematical literacy. It would not be the exact form of history that you have now. And if it's proposed, they say, it would be for civic, responsibilities. In other words, to make sure that you come out as a citizen who's well-rounded in terms of understanding your environment, understanding the politics, but you don't necessarily need the skills that the core history offers. And I thought that giving an example of math and math lit is an appropriate equivalent. Let me also say, learners, even for further education and training, that some learners offer up to 8 and 9 subjects. Minister. When the rule is that we expect a minimum of 7. 6 that are subjected to external assessment, and then like orientation, which at the moment is not subjected to external assessment. And I think they could even go up to 10. And offer as many subjects. We don't have limitations like we used to have. The current curriculum allows for that. The money is provided. I mean, the state is paying for all this. The state is, except for in private schools, the state is paying for it, including for quintile 4 and 5. The state is paying for teachers. The state is providing textbooks. SACMEC, I'm terribly sorry. There are so many acronyms in education. Maybe we need to put a catalogue of acronyms and then make it available to honorable colleagues. SACMEC stands for Southern, SACMEC is Southern African Consortium for Monitoring Education Quality. But now it's got Eastern. We put in the Eastern countries are part of that. That's the acronym for that. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be SICMEC too. Private schools are not included on the list. They are not included in the list that we've been using. History shouldn't be offered as mandatory from retail. I've explained the rationale, and I'm sure in the same way that the minister agrees with you, maybe he's also agreed with us that a consideration could be made. Honorable Bosho, the minister explained NAMA. In fact, this past week, Northern Cape was working with Namibia, because NAMA is a well-developed and offered language in Namibia. The officials and teachers from Namibia were training teachers in the Northern Cape in preparation for the implementation of this. Reaching the objectives, Honorable Bosho, you said by 2016 and so on, are we ready for that? I think I'll draw your attention to slide number 22. That's slide number 22. Slide